I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Larry Holsey, spokesperson for the City of Waco. In our conversation, Larry recounts his 21 years on the job, how technology is changing his role, and why at age 75 he shows no signs of slowing down. But before that interview, let's shine the small business spotlight presented by American Bank on Waco bookbinding.
Am avut casă personală când poveștile din România pentru copii era lui Ion Creangă, amintiri din copilărie, amintiri frumoase care și acum nu le-am uitat.
Thank you. On the 1400 block of Franklin Avenue, Joseph Tofanel keeps tradition alive. Not just through his Romanian language, which he utilizes in phone calls with old friends nearly every day, but through his chosen profession of bookbinding.
This one is 200 years old. It's in the German language. It's in the have wood cover, and the need to remodel, refix it, and the page by page. After that, make it in the new cover.
The German Bible he's referencing looks like it had been recovered from the rubble after the bombing of Dresden. It's incredible to me that someone could, much less would, provide the care and attention to bring this great text back to life.
Anything, all books I rebind.
Whether a piece is 2 or 200 years old, at Waco Bookbinding, the process stays the same.
First time need to recondition all pages. And if what is broken, I put on masking tape or put on the clear tape. After that, need the sewing, put on glue, spine, cutting, make the cover, put on press.
Joseph first learned bookbinding as a trade back in Romania at age 14. He spent a decade in the business before moving into accounting and construction, and he worked as a cabinet maker in Waco when he immigrated here in 1986. But after he retired, Joseph felt a pull to the profession of his youth and opened Waco Bookbinding in 2013. According to his son, Sergio, the process keeps Joseph's OCD tendencies at bay and gives him a reason to get out of bed every morning.
I mean, when you see these books and the kind of restoration that they need, and you need to be able to spend hours, you know, going page by page and trying to restore them, trying to figure out, you know, what do you want to do, don't you want to do? Kind of like a museum piece sometimes.
Sergio says his dad is a one-man show.
I just give him technical support, computers, printers.
Sergio handles the newfangled technology, so Joseph can work exclusively with his machines, some of which outstrip his own 75 years of life.
I like it, old machine, because I'm old too.
Books, like clothing styles and musical tastes, cycle in and out of fashion. Thankfully, today's technologically driven world is causing some people to long for the hard labor of handicraft exemplified by Joseph's work at Waco Bookbinding.
You definitely have the old Waco. I mean, it's alive and well right now. Most of our customers are gray hair, just like him. You know, they have their old cookbooks, they have their old Bibles, sentimental items.
The Small Business Spotlight is presented by American Bank, with three locations in town, including an expanded branch at Franklin and 4th. I'm now joined in studio by the Director of Continuing Education for McLennan Community College, Stephanie Maltzby. Welcome to the program.
Great. Thanks for having me, Austin.
Can you let our listeners know exactly what continuing education is and what MCC offers to people in Waco?
Continuing education is such a broad brush. We offer everything from what we call our enrichment courses, which is, you know, expanding hobbies, things in cooking, sewing, arts, outdoors, life, animals. We also have an area called corporate training where we work with our area businesses, both big and small, and meet all their training needs for their employees. And also we work with the Texas Workforce Commission on writing grants for area businesses as well. We have another arm, which is our health and human services arm, where we offer certificates in allied health, where you can get degrees and or certificates and get careers in phlebotomy and EKG technician and certified nurse aide, medication aide. And then also, and probably the most fun part for me is McLennan Community College's Highlander Ranch out in Bosqueville, where all of our equine programs are housed, as well as our vet tech program and ag program, also fall under continuing education at the college.
There's so many programs that anyone who lives in Waco or in the surrounding areas can participate in. I have taught my Learn to Podcast class through MCC's Continuing Ed, and actually, my wife this summer is going to be teaching a kids' comedy class. It's going to be a camp for a week long, and you get to have a final production at the Hippodrome. But I think that a lot of people in Waco don't realize all this knowledge. You know, I want to learn how to code. I want to know how to be better in my job. They don't realize that all of this is available affordably at MCC.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned your wife's camp. I think my son's actually going to take that camp this summer. He is definitely a budding comic. But yeah, and that's the fun part, too. You mentioned about kids' college is that we've mirrored our kids' college to match our adult programs. So when you see culinary, when you see etiquette classes, when you see coding, you mentioned coding, computer classes, you name it, it's there, and we can do it. And if we don't have a class for that, we can create it. We're also always interested in instructors that want to share their gifts with the Waco community as well.
You are a wildly talented person who I got to know through doing Leadership Waco with the Waco Chamber. And, you know, conceivably, Stephanie, you could be anywhere doing your work. Why have you chosen MCC? What's special about being at McLennan Community College for you?
Oh, you know, I've been at MCC now for 15 years. And I've been in continuing education at MCC for 15 years. And it's just an outstanding place to work. The environment there, the culture there, the faculty and staff there, and the amount that they give back to our community is just incredible. I can't imagine working anywhere else.
If listeners want to engage with the continuing ed program at MCC, what is the best way for them to access that info?
We have a website. If you go to www.mccandu.com, you can see a whole plethora of courses that we offer. Also, we have a catalog that you can pick up just about anywhere around town, HEB, Walmart. And if you want one mailed to you, you can just give us a call and we're happy to put you on the mailing list.
Educate yourself this year. Continuing ed offered at McLennan Community College. Stephanie Maltzby, the director of the program, thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me, Austin.
I'm now joined in studio by Larry Holsey. Larry is the spokesman for the city of Waco. Welcome to Downtown Depot.
Well, thank you, Austin. Thanks for having me here.
Larry, what is your history in Waco?
Well, I was born and raised in Waco. Blessed to have a very fine family background and strong family background. My dad had a retail music store. Any of your older listeners will know the fact that the Holsey Music Company existed from 1937 until, sadly, the guy that bought it from us in 2008 put it in bankruptcy, but that was nothing to do with us. But, yeah, very musical family. Grew up in my dad was choir director for 28 years, so I was at the church quite a bit, youth choir director.
And which church was this?
This was St. John's United Methodist Church, which is on the corner of 18th and Bosque. It's no longer there. It ended up merging with Central United Methodist Church with two or three other ones that, frankly, just died because of lack of youth coming in. But anyway, grew up in Waco, went to all Waco schools, of course, worked at the music store in the afternoons. That was just part of what you did in those days. So our music store background was band instruments, pianos, organs, guitars, amps. We were huge Magnavox dealers in the 60s and 70s with VCRs. In fact, we actually operated the first movie rental place in town. We had 50 titles, VHS, and that was available for those people who bought their VCRs from us. So it was an incentive for that. So
you were selling musical equipment. Were you also selling records and VHS tapes?
Didn't do much with records and things like that. There were other companies that were doing that. So we stayed away from that. But yeah, we ended up, we had two stores in Waco. We had one in Temple, one in Killeen. And just as I was selling the business, we opened a store in College Station too. So it was a big operation. We had about 35 employees and and serviced everything we sold. And that was back in the days where people appreciated the details that a family-owned business could give, service, which is heavy. I'll never forget, my dad said, the most important asset we have is our people. And I can't say that that's happening today, in especially most of the big corporate world. So, you know, anyway, I grew up in that and enjoyed that. And then in 1992 and 93, I was on the Waco City Council. Prior to that, I was on the Plan Commission. So I had a love for giving back. And, of course, during that time at the music company, I was more or less in charge of marketing, public relations. I had aspirations of being on radio. And my dad was such a wise man when I thought I was going to be in radio and right out of high school. He convinced me to go to Tyler. His brother-in-law, actually my uncle, was the district engineer for TXU, Texas Utility, Texas Power and Light is what it was. And he knew the manager or owner of the top 40 radio station. And so he got me a job, theoretically. It was a part-time job and an internship, that type of stuff. But it allowed me to go. So as a freshman, I went over to Tyler, went to Tyler Junior College on a full scholarship on trumpet. I was a trumpet player all through high school. I went through a full scholarship over there and worked at KDOK. It was an AM daytime, if you knew anything about broadcasting in those days. I'd actually studied a little bit and gotten my broadcast first-class FCC broadcast license. So I was an engineer-type person. Really was always blessed with the technical abilities to do a lot of technical things. My dad, when he would sell church organs and electronic organs, and these were in the tube days, so that takes you back a very long time. He taught me how to work on organs and things before I could even drive. My mother would drive me to the churches or the funeral homes or the homes that had these church organs, and I would fix them when I was 12, 13 years old.
Do you have a seminal memory of what made you first fall in love with radio? Was there a program that you listened to or a specific Magnavox speaker that you loved playing with?
I really can't think of anything, Austin, that was specific to that. I knew my voice was changing, and I was able to develop it in certain ways. My dad, being choir director, he wanted me to sing baritone and bass, and ended up singing anything he needed me to, depending on Sunday morning they were short of and everything. But I ended up training my voice. I did, certainly after that 1 year of time finding out that could not make it in radio unless you moved around a lot. My wife and I were dating, and I was very serious about her, and she was me about me, and so that kept me from going there. Plus, in those days, everybody smoked a lot, and radio stations were just filled with smoke, and I couldn't tolerate that. So the Lord was with me and kind of guided me away from that and took me into back where I needed to be, to the music store, and that's where I, you know, dedicated all the technical energy that I had and creativity, did all the marketing, public relations. I did all system integration. We ended up getting into computers in the early 80s, which was a lot ahead, way ahead of many businesses in those days. And we actually hired a full-time guy that wrote programming. And so I learned how to do some early programming on computers. We ended up selling our very advanced, customized music store software to several other music stores, San Antonio Music down in San Antonio, Gents House of Music up in Lubbock, and a couple other places, and made some pretty good money on that. But anyway, it was system integration, design layout, and that fell right into when I got the opportunity to be the director of public information, which I'm at the city right now. What an amazing opportunity. I click myself so many times and say, how do you get to have all this fun and you get paid for it too? So, because I was able to take my gifts that God gave me, and the talents and the energies and abilities, my voice, and be representing the city that I love so much.
So did you move into that position after the sale of the music store in 2008, or was this prior to that?
No, it was after that. I sold the music store in 92, 93. My brother and I did. I have a brother that's 4 years older than I, and I think we're a great partnership. We did specific things in the organization. But yes, after we sold the music company, I was kind of just, you know, footloose and fancy free for a while, and knew I wasn't going to just be able to sit idle and everything else. And like I said, I'd already been on the city council back in 92, 93, so I had a taste of that. I'd been in a number of different organizations on a volunteer basis. I was president of the Better Business Bureau. I was on the symphony board. I was president of Rotary Club, and still active there too. So, you know, it's Waco is just such a wonderful place. And I remember back in 92, 93 when I was on the council, we were talking about the different types of things that City of Waco should be marketing and doing. You know, the Brazos River, Baylor University, all the assets that we are now blessed to have, and our people are realizing, man, Waco's a great place. And we were talking about that then, but we didn't have good spokespeople like we did that really bring that that number up higher. So, yeah, no, I was able to, somebody told me, they said, there's a job available at the city you might be interested in. So I went down, and Kathy Rice was the city manager at the time. And she and I just hit it off right off the bat. I had some things she wanted out of the communication director at that time, and I was able to fulfill those. And that's where the dream began right now. It's just been really great.
With your time on city council or with the Better Business Bureau, you have a long history of giving yourself to your community. And even in this position, with which I hope you are compensated adequately for your terrific experience that you bring, but this is a public service. You have your information that goes on the public news channel. Was there someone in your life early on who impressed you with this vision of public service and giving of yourself for your city?
Well, my dad obviously was one of my mentors. He was in the Lions Club compared to Rotary Club. He did a lot of other public service and community volunteers and stuff. That was probably the first one that come to mind. But there's a joy you get if you're really passionate about something, volunteering and being a part of something like that. Just you get the greatest reward for something that you don't get paid for, because that's why your passion is. Your passion is focused on what you want to do, not what you have to do. Sadly enough, and interestingly enough, I love doing my job, so I want to do my job. But there's a lot of people that don't get into that. They don't have the opportunity to have a position like I do that really is rewarding. And when you come to work, you know, we all have our list of want to, have to, and need tos. And, of course, I've got all those. But I get to do what I want to a lot of times, and it's all in the same common good for the city.
Your technical title is the Director of Municipal Information for the City of Waco. Where was that department when you first took over, and how has the position evolved since your time in the role?
Very interesting question. I've been with the city now 21 years, believe it or not. Who would have ever guessed? The business office is part of it. It's on the first floor of City Hall where it is now, but it's at the top total opposite end where the human resources have taken on that area. And it moved in 2007. A lot of things happened at that time. The convention center was being remodeled and renovated, and actually our television studios were in the balcony of the Chisholm Hall, the big display room, the big meeting room there. Very awkward, because we had our offices, or our office in City Hall, and then you had to go over the convention center, so it was not conducive to really working together and whatever with our television production people. My broadcast background and my love for television and some of the engineering part of it is really what my passion was, the television side as much, because prior to this, at First United Methodist Church here in Waco, in addition to working with children, I also was in charge of broadcast media. We did every other week radio broadcasts of the worship service, and then every fourth Sunday, KWGX Channel 10 would come with a remote truck and do the television broadcast there. I ended up taking that process to a every week telecast. I ended up having to kind of sell sponsorships inside our church ministry to pay for the airtime. And I was the one who actually helped purchase and install all the broadcast equipment. So I formulated the broadcast facilities that First Methodist Church had in the mid-80s. Again, operated that, and boy, I could tell you some interesting, fun stories, but we were not live. We were tape-delayed, and people who know anything about broadcast, this was back in three-quarter-inch U-matic times, which at the city we have a couple of old U-matic machines that the Texas Collection actually comes to us and says, hey, we've got this old U-matic tape, and we still have a machine that we can dub that off and upgrade it to the mile current, you know, whatever the media is. So, but yeah, we did that for about 6 years, I guess it was. And it was really an interesting challenge, because we would record the first half of the service, and because the airtime on Channel 25 started immediately when the service was over, we had to send the first tape over before we were even finished recording the second tape, and it was fun. But anyway, but I did that. But when I came to work for the city, back to your original question, I had the opportunity, and that's, I guess, my key word. I love the word opportunity. We're all given the gift of whatever talents God's given us, and to be able to use the opportunities that are put in front of us. And believe me, I've been placed with a lot of opportunities. And here I've been able to develop a television station that the city had by way of the franchise agreement. And with the help of some very talented people I was able to hire, we've just done some amazing things. And so actually when I came on board and joined the city in 98, in August 18th actually of 1998, the city channel that the cable franchise at that time, it was Cablevision originally. It evolved into Time Warner, now Spectrum, Charter Spectrum. When you have a franchise agreement with a city, you have the franchise authority to be able to run your cables through the city streets. And that's part of that agreement. But also the FCC required that the cable providers, in this instance Time Warner and eventually Grandi, would need to provide the city entity, the city government, with one or more channels to communicate what the city's doing. And so we actually got three channels. We have what we call now the city Waco City Cable Channel 10. We had one that is, the city loans the Waco ISD, that's Channel 17. And then we also have the College Channel, which is shared between Baylor, TSDC, and MCC. And I talked about that a little later on. But when I came on board, the city channel had the city council meetings on, the plan commission meetings, and an occasional summer sound. That's about it, concert. So I sat down, I got to thinking, what would somebody supposed to do if you had a television station at your disposal, which we did. And so I was able to hire Mark Randolph was my first and the best thing I did right off the bat. Mark had been working for the Texas Farm Bureau doing production. He came from Channel 10, said some news background. And I sat down with him and I said, I have a dream for this TV station. There's no reason why this station can't be just as competitive and provide programming that the current Channel 10, 6, 25, 44 wasn't on the air at the time. And actually we had a PBS channel. KWBU was on. And I said, we're going to be able to go after some things that nobody else is doing. And we started doing stories on the history of Waco. Such a vast source of history, people telling their stories. The museums of Waco, we had at that time 18 museums in town. People need to know about this. And this is not the type of thing that the other channels would be interested in carrying, because this was not what I term the news of that everybody wanted, blood, guts, and gore, bottom line. That's what sells. Very easily, we were able to step in and start doing those kind of programming. Consequently, what we were able to do is create a good inventory of programs that we could repeat, because history programs don't get old. They don't get out of date. And Mark Randolph and I did a whole lot of fun stuff going and interviewing people and having them tell their story. Now, my way of interviewing is maybe like what you're doing right now, because you've not had an opportunity, first of all, to ask me very much. But the way Mark and I interview, he does the videography part and editing, but I would go and get the people who were there at the scene. For example, the 1953 tornado Waco had. Back in 2003, we set out to do a 30-minute documentary for the 50th anniversary. And so we put out a request for anybody that was available, still alive, and would like to talk about it. Well, we got 10 people, 15 people. The bottom line result, we ended up doing three two-hour documentaries with people just telling their story. I never asked a question. I didn't interview anybody, because my way of interviewing getting somebody is because I don't want to know. If I were to interview you right now, Austin, first of all, I don't know much about you. So I would be investigating and asking about you. The tornado had already been covered for 50 years. I didn't want to read what the tornado was and ask you specific things that I already knew about. I want you to tell me things I don't know about you. And so our philosophy was, and it worked so well, we would sit down with the cameras running. The tornado happened on May 11th, 1953. I'd always say, tell me what you were doing on May the 10th, 1953. Where were you, what you were doing? And then just tell me how that evolved into the next day. And the people would start talking. And when they're doing, just as you're doing right now, if the person would ever stop talking, which you know me, I will not probably stop. You better interrupt me.
I'll cut you off here in a minute, okay. But please continue.
But But you're doing the exact same thing. You don't know about what I do. You're wanting to find out the stories and things. And so we would let the people just vent and tell their stories, passionate stories. And when they stopped talking and you feel like they're winding down, I sat there. They knew the camera was still running. And so their mind is thinking, what else can I say? What else can I say? What else do I need to say? And eventually, they would come out with things that had never been told before. Some of the times we were interviewing people, we had a spouse or a family member right present. And after it was over with, they said, I've never heard them say that before. But anyway, these are the kind of stories. We don't have a script. We don't have a predetermined way of, you know, interviewing someone. And so that type of programming has brought us to kind of what we are today. And here's the magic that happened. And I always feel like the Lord has plans for a lot of things that happened. And in 2007, a good friend of mine, Matt Rohr, who was the regional vice president of Grande. At that time, Grande had about 30% or more, a little more than that, of share of the market compared to Time Warner in the franchise of the cable deal. So they had everything to gain and nothing to lose by trying something. We were providing a channel. Didn't cost them anything to get it. He came to me and says, Larry, what would you think about having a high-definition channel? Well, in those days, this was in 2007, 2008, KWTX was not on the air with high definition yet. They were talking. They were real close. KCEN was very close. Channel 25 was very close. We came on the air in December of 2008 as the first high-definition city channel in the nation. And we were within about a month or so of all the other broadcast stations coming on the air. So that gave us something to really work toward because that was voluntary. Ronnie didn't have to do that, but it did give them a leg up and a channel that they could offer to their cable subscribers, high definition. So we've taken that and run with it and just been blessed. I'd go out to NAB, National Association of Broadcasters, in Las Vegas every year, and when they'd see that we were from Waco, they said, how'd you get an HD channel? Because no cable company would want to give up the bandwidth. Because for every HD channel, you can pump 3 to 6 SD channels, standard def channels, down that same bandwidth. And furthermore, it wasn't going to make them any money. We weren't generating any kind of revenue for them. So it was a bold move by Matt Rohr, and that's it. So,
Larry, you are such an interesting mix of the technical expertise coupled with amazing soft skills. And what you were talking about earlier in those conversations with these tornado survivors, mm-hmm. being willing to let there be a little bit of space, because the space is going to be filled. It's either going to be filled by you rushing another question or by them being thoughtful and oftentimes giving a little information that otherwise you would be not privy to. So yeah. I think the city of Waco is in such great hands having you as a spokesperson. And for our listeners who want to hear more about Larry and the work that he's done, I would encourage you to do two things. One, check out C-SPAN, where there's a snippet of that terrific piece on the tornado. And secondly, check out your Waco City cable channel, where you can hear Larry talking about all the important news happening in Waco. Larry Holsey, spokesperson for the city of Waco, thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Larry Holsey, Joseph Tafonel of Waco Bookbinding, Stephanie Maltzby of McLennan Community College, and you for tuning in. If you want to stay up to date in between episodes, be sure you're following Waco Business News on Facebook and Instagram for all the latest info of happenings in your town. I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.